Hey, Greg, how's it going?
So you said we were going to do a song off the top.
Yeah.
At first I'm like, wow, son of a preacher man, how exciting.
Kinda.
And then it wound up being Hits from a Bong from Cypress Hill.
And why are we playing this today?
I don't know why.
Because how many teams are there in Canada?
Let's see, did we make it eight?
Let's count.
Forget.
Vancouver, Edmonton, Calgary, Winnipeg, Toronto, Ottawa, Montreal. And as soon as Justin Trudeau is officially sworn in as the new Prime Minister of this country, I expect there to be weed vending machines at every single rink right beside the beer stands. Canada, for those that don't know, listening stateside, last night elected in landslide territory an overwhelming majority. A federal politician, son of the former Pierre Elliott Trudeau, who campaigned on, amongst other things, legalizing marijuana in Canada from coast to coast. Not decriminalizing, but legalizing marijuana from St. John's to Victoria. Legal
yes.
weed.
And having been to many parts of that great nation, I can tell you there is a word for legalizing pot in Canada, and that word is formality, as in a mere formality.
It's certainly true. But whether you agree with his political stripes or not, the son of Pierre Elliott Trudeau is now the new Prime Minister of Canada. Well, he is to be sworn in. We'll figure out what the scheduling for that's going to be. But Justin Trudeau is the new Prime Minister of Canada. Yeah, legal weed.
It sounds like your liberals sound more liberal than our liberals. Is that fair to say?
Yeah. But the thing is, here's the thing. Our conservatives are your liberals. Like, if you look at, it's funny because we look at conservatives in Canada, you know, Stephen Harper and the Conservative Party, and we think that it's so draconian until we see what happens with the Republican stateside, which just completely terrifies Canadians.
Right.
If the Harper conservatives ran on their platform in the United States, they would be considered liberals, 100%.
Our Republicans are your secessionists, I believe.
Yeah, they're the Bloc Québécois, essentially.
Right.
We're happy on an island, we'll stay on an island.
It seemed like everybody was really happy last, not only because the Jays did what they did, but also because it sounded like, and maybe this is just me following a lot of city folk on Twitter, but it sounds like a lot of people were really happy with the way the election went. Is it fair to say that this will be a welcomed change in regime in Canada?
I mean, that's clearly. See, I don't know whether the vote was. Well, I do. The vote wasn't specifically pro Justin Trudeau, as opposed to there was a lot of anti Stephen Harper sentiment out there after his numerous terms as Prime Minister of the country. There was a real movement to, as they say, heave Steve, because Canada had taken a sharper turn right. And that's really sort of not where Canadians live. And he ran a pretty divisive campaign, you know, continue to look for wedge issues to divide Canadians. And Canadians don't do well when they're divided from one another. It's really bizarre,
right,
considering how large the country is, second largest country in the on the face of the earth. Yet we don't like to be divided. Now, there's only 30 million of us over this massive expanse of land, but we don't like to be divided amongst one another, even though there are huge differences between, you know, Quebec and British Columbia. The one thing that Canadians really get their backs up is if someone deliberately tries to divide them to look for wedge issues in a political race.
Now, from a hockey perspective, how does this affect things? Because I know that from what I've been reading in the hockey news, which I don't believe is a political publication, but maybe I'm wrong, Stephen Harper is our number one hockey fan in Canada.
Stephen
He's a hockey fan in chief.
Has written a book on the history of hockey in Toronto. Stephen Harper is perhaps our most famous member of the Cue the Trumpets, Society for International Hockey Research. And, you know, he's always been seen at, you know, various hockey games, you know, usually the ones that have, well, listen, he was at the Memorial Cup last year, sitting with Patrick Waugh, the Colisée. Like, the guy is a legitimate hockey fan. I'll give him that. He's not just, you know, fake the funk, show up when there's going to be a high-profile hockey game and make sure that he's getting a little bit of FaceTime to show the country that he's a hockey fan. No, this guy comes by it legit.
What do we know about Justin Trudeau and his hockey credentials?
First of all, he's a boxing fan, I think, more than he's a hockey fan. So it's a return to fighting in hockey then in Canada is essentially what you're saying. I'm not. I mean, I know he's a Montreal Canadiens fan. I mean, pretty much every politician is a hockey fan. But yeah, he's a Montreal Canadiens fan, where Stephen Harper never liked to talk about the kind of hockey fan that he was, even though he was born in, you know, Leaside, Toronto, and probably grew up a Leafs fan, but then moved to Calgary and then became a Calgary Flames fan, but never sort of said, I am one or the other. Playing it very politically. Whereas there are other politicians. Jack Layton was a Canadiens fan. Justin Trudeau's a Canadiens fan.
I have to imagine that if you're a Canadian politician and you say, hockey never really did it for me, would be akin to an American politician. American politician saying, I don't like sports.
Yeah, baseball is really not. Yeah, I don't get anything out of the World Series. Yeah, I don't have not a chance. Everyone, whether you mean it or not. And there have been a couple of politicians who get, you know, very confused and very scared when two things are around, a hockey stick and a camera. There have been a couple of politicians who, when handed a hockey stick, have really embarrassed yourself. Sir, that's a left-handed stick. Why are you shooting right? Oh, right, of course. Go ahead. Here's the thing. Overwhelmingly, the country has voted pro-liberal in this one. Is it pro-liberal or anti-conservative? That's for yourself to decide. But the people that I work with, like people within the hockey industry, hockey itself, the game, isn't just a conservative type sport, but the people around it lean more towards the conservative party in Canada, I think, than the fans that follow it.
A lot of that's financial.
100%. Yeah. And a lot of people that I talk to on, you know, Saturday nights for hockey night, and I won't go into the names, but there was a real sense of terror at the idea that that Justin Trudeau was going to become the next prime minister. And there's a, you know, legitimate bafflement as to why it wasn't going to be Stephen Harper again. But hockey's
what are they afraid of? Like higher taxes and stuff?
Or? Well, I mean, yeah, that's the thing, right? Tax and spend liberals. That's always been the – but put it this way. Everything you guys say about Democrats, insert liberal. Tax and spend, higher taxes, you're going to be spending more, bleeding heart, like all that. As opposed to the fiscally responsible, where everything comes down to an economic balance sheet, which is a conservative
party. We've had two politicians here in the States recently with hockey credentials. Excuse me. And the first, obviously, is Senator John Kerry, who's an actual player who ran for president.
Mm-hmm.
And his hockey credentials are legit. And you still see pictures of him playing in like pickup games and stuff. And then, obviously, former vice presidential candidate Sarah Palin, who taught us that the only difference between a bulldog and a hockey mom is lipstick, was the thing.
I can see Russia.
Now, our current commander-in-chief, however, and this is going to be no news to my friends in the Washington Capitals community, despite being in the White House during some very, very impressive years for the Capitals in an outdoor hockey game, has never been to a Capitals game in all his time in D.C. He's had the Blackhawks to the White House a couple times and other hockey teams, obviously the Bruins except for Tim Thomas. But he has never himself gone to a Washington Capitals game despite having gone to, a Redskins game, college basketball games in the area, Wizards game.
Why not?
Never to the Capitals. I don't know.
I thought the Winter Classic would have been the obvious one because he's a Chicago guy. It's the Blackhawks facing off against the Caps. It's Washington. It seemed like a no-brainer to me. Like, that's the layup or the empty net goal. How come? Has he ever explained? Has anyone ever asked him, hey, dude, like, you ever going to go to a hockey game?
I want to say that it's been asked to at least his press secretary, and I don't know if we've ever gotten an answer, and I don't get it. I don't get it. I know it's not a security issue, because he's been to other sporting events,
right.
And the White House is within walking distance of Verizon Center. Like, I walked from Verizon Center to the White House when we killed Bin Laden, so I know exactly how far away it is.
So I
still don't get it. There have been draft proposals from Capitals fans to get Obama to a Capitals game. I believe it might have been Russian Machine Never Breaks that did Barack the Red was their campaign instead of Rock the Red, but never has been to a game. So at the very least, Canada has that over the U.S. in the sense that your commander-in-chief, sir, I don't know what the hell you call them. I thought the Queen led the country until about a week ago. Your leaders are hockey fans and hockey people that go to hockey games and write hockey books.
Yep.
And ours are either, you know, people that claim they're Blackhawks fans and never go to a hockey game or from Texas. So it's kind of the way it works.
Who was the last president to go to a hockey game? Did Bush go to a hockey game?
I don't know if Bush went to a hockey game.
Clinton go to a hockey game?
Wow, that's a really good question. I don't know the answer.
I don't know either. I'm throwing it out there. Attention, society, international hockey research people.
Yeah, anybody the last from president the States that went knows, to a hockey that game. That can prove it with a picture that they went to a hockey game. Please do.
I wonder who the last one. I'm trying to think. 60s.
Mm. Wow.
Nixon.
I thought well, JFK probably went at some point. I mean, JFK was the embodiment of New England values.
Oh, he must have been to a but Bruins were terrible then. He probably wouldn't have gone to a Boston game. They were awful through the 60s. They were a laughingstock in the 60s.
Yeah, and I guess it'd be probably easier when there was a team in D.C., so we're talking about post-Jimmy Carter, right?
Yeah, because Caps came in 72.
So Gerald Ford, right? So that would have been Ford as well. Hmm. Gerald Ford seems like he might have stumbled into a hockey game by mistake one day.
Where am I? Why is it so cold in here?
This isn't the Senate building.
How did I get in here? Who paid for all that?
Coming up on the show today, René Lavoie will join us to talk about Montreal and all things Canadiens.
Renaud's great,
yeah,
eh? Sam and I were just talking about this before the show. He really is fantastic. There are some people we have on the podcast who just have glowing voices. For me, Renaud Lavoie is one of those people.
Renaud's going to join us to talk about the Habs, and then we'll also probably bug him about Quebec. And then later on in the show, we're going to talk about the article we had in Puck Daddy today about the most underrated players in the National Hockey League, once again proving that National Hockey League players don't know what the word underrated means. And then we'll also talk about Duncan Keith having surgery, being out up to 6 weeks for the Hawks. But producer Sam, if you have the wherewithal to do so, why don't we start the show proper, shall we?
I like how you give him lead time now. It's pretty good. Oh!
Jeff Merrick of Sportsnet.
Are you familiar with the game called hockey?
All I have to do is talk for a living.
If you say lube 10 times, you just feel better.
You say lube 10 times, you gotta feel better.
Why shouldn't I always be happy? I'm stealing money.
And Greg Wyshynski of Yahoo Sports.
I went through life with this last name, okay? I'm a kindly old wizard. Close your eyes, hold your nose, swallow the medicine.
Debate hockey.
Swift current Broncos. Lethbridge Hurricanes, the Vancouver Giants.
God. Pop culture.
I don't want to be culturally insensitive. I never am on this show, so we still may have Twinkies here in the States.
So I may have the ho-ho. Good news,
might have
the
ding dong.
And
this
more
is an old
hockey.
One. Jeff Merrick on the
this Yeah, it is.
This old one.
Yeah, knocking the biscuit around.
Merrick versus Wyshynski.
Let's start prefer to think prime, of it as classic.
Oh, classic. That's right. Hey, at what point does a classic rock station just become an oldie station?
Yeah. Well, that's the changeover, right? Like, now oldies are probably Soundgarden and Pearl Jam, technically.
Wow.
Right?
Get me my walker.
Phil Coker writes in, does Vladimir Putin count as far as leaders who are hockey fans? Well, I mean, he's not only a hockey fan, he's also the best player in Russia.
Okay, you know what?
Based on the stats.
You know what else is going to be, and how no one wants to hit him or, you know, take the puck away from him when they're playing a game for fear of what will happen to their families. Now, right. The international stage there is now a competition, Greg. Between Vladimir Putin and Justin Trudeau. Do you know what it is?
No, what is it?
Who will appear shirtless the most times in public? Because one thing that our prime minister now loves to do is take his shirt off, buddy. I think he's our first tattooed prime minister as well. He's got some ink on left shoulder. Yeah.
What is it?
I don't know. I've only seen it in pictures, actually from a boxing match of someone who served in the Senate, Patrick Brazzo, who's now disgraced and no longer part of the Senate, was involved in a... Oh, let's just say strippers and cocaine scandal, for lack of a better term.
But did he pee in a coffee cup?
Well, that gentleman was removed from the progressive, from the conservative. What a,
like, listen.
Honestly, dude, we had the most whacked election. We really did. You're not wrong. There was a candidate.
Like, I figure,
there was a candidate,
I mean,
who
strippers
did,
and
was,
cocaine, that's old hat. That's kind of expected. But the minute you whip it out and pee in someone's coffee cup.
God, yeah, I know. And a CBC's thing. I know. So bad.
Karen Douglas, by the way, says that Clinton was the first president to attend an NHL game.
Good.
There's a picture. She sends a video over, and I'll retweet this, of Clinton and Gary Bettman sitting together in the stands, or I guess in the luxury box. Bettman, of course, is very young. He looks in his early Steve Carell years, and Clinton is there at a Caps Sabres game. Sabres, it's a playoff game. Oh, man. He went to a playoff game.
Oh, good for him. Hey, pause on that because Renaud Lavoie is standing by. We got to get to him. He's an important guy.
Do your big intro, sir.
All right. Here's our good friend. When you want to know what's happening with the Montreal Canadiens or anything hockey for that matter, we talked to Renaud Lavoie from TVA Sports. Renaud, salut, mon ami. Mon chum, ça va?
I'm good. And you guys?
We're good. Thanks so much for doing this. Are the Montreal Canadiens ever going to lose another game again?
That's a great question. You know what? I was talking to Jeff Petrie this morning after practice, and we looked at all the games that the Canadiens played, and you know what? The worst game was the one versus the Maple Leafs.
Yeah.
And that's really strange to say. Not that the Leafs didn't compete well that night. I think the Leafs, in a way, deserved maybe to win that game versus Montreal. And I remember Michel Therrien after the game was not really happy about his team performance. But since then, I mean, it's not a fluke. And that's what I was talking with Jeff is the Canadiens have now 6 wins in a row, and they just beat all their teams at the exception of the Toronto Maple Leafs for the first game. Mm-hmm. But tonight it's going to be a real test for them because it's the St. Louis Blues, and it's a team that won their last 4 games, actually, and all those games were in Canada. And they beat easily the Flames, the Canucks, the Oilers, so and the Jets. I wonder how it's going to be for the Montreal Canadiens tonight, but the good news for them is this game is at home, and as you know, it's really tough to beat the Canadiens in Montreal.
Yeah, and when you break down the numbers, I mean, 1.17 goals against average is what you expect.
Yeah.
I mean, you got the best goalie in the world right there. 3.33 goals for puts them 5th in the league right now, and I think the most impressive thing for me about that number so far is that they're 5th in the league in scoring, but basically doing it with a power play that's hovering around 15%.
Well, it's about time, though. And the reason the power play is working is because they spent a lot of time in practices working on it. And they had only 2 goals on power play before Saturday's game versus the Red Wings. So it didn't work really well. But you know what? It's such a good team, 5-on-5, that they don't expect to score goals every time they have a power play. But what Michel Therrien really doesn't like is the fact that they were losing momentum when they had their power plays. It was exactly like last year. Last year, at one point, Michel was joking and saying, you know what, can we just, you know, cancel that power play and leave it on, leave it and we'll play 5-on-5.
Decline the penalty.
Yeah.
You know what, they thought that they were losing all their momentum with their power plays. It was turning that way to start the season, and to be honest with you, it really worked well versus the Detroit Red Wings. How is it going to be tonight? That's a big question. But what I notice is because the Canadiens players are so fast, it's unbelievable the number of power plays that they have in a game. It's always a surprise for me. And it was the case versus the Rangers last week. Was the case versus the Red Wing again. So they're beating good teams because those teams are just unable to skate with the Canadiens, and that says a lot about Montreal's team.
The interesting thing about that power play, too, when I look at it, just a couple of sort of nickel and dime observations so far this season. 2 things. One, they move the puck too slowly. And
yep.
2, it seems as if nothing's really changed, you know, in the last couple of seasons. The MO for the power play is the same. Get it back to the point, hammer the slap shot, try to bang in little rebounds.
Yeah, you're right. And they changed things this year. It's J.J. Daniel, who is now the power play boss in Montreal. And you know what? And you talk about their play in their zone. You're right. But the other thing is, on a power play, you're not always in the other zone. Sometimes the puck is getting back in your defensive zone, and you need to put it back in the offensive zone. And I'm telling you, they were struggling just to go with the puck in the neutral zone and put it behind the other team defensemen or forwards. So that was a big problem. They were able to work on it last week. It worked. But you're right. They didn't move the puck at all at one point. Everybody was standing still. And I feel like they have too much talent to do that. But what they're focusing on really is controlling the puck. And that's, they want to have the puck on their stick. That's why maybe they're shooting a little less. And they're always looking at PK shots. They want PK to shoot more. Right now, it's not really working. That doesn't mean it's not going to work tonight or it's not going to work in the next few games. So, but at the end of the day, they have too much talent right now to be at 15%. I feel it's a team that should be easily at 22, 23% right now.
The good news for the Habs is that the Plekanec and Pacioretty line has generated about 10 goals. But you can't win with one line. So what have you seen from Galchenyuk, Semeneller? Is there reason to hope that this trio, if they're kept together, is going to find a groove at some point?
They were really good during the preseason game. They were good versus the Maple Leafs for the first game. The thing is, Alexander Semin has no goals, and he's not shooting the puck a lot.
Eight shots.
Yeah, exactly. Eight shots. It's not enough. He's got too much talent to sit around and trying to make those beautiful passes. He needs to shoot more. I'm pretty sure, something that the coaches are asking him. I'm not saying he's bad. He's not. He's playing well. His motivation level is, I'll say, high. That doesn't mean that he's perfect on the ice. He's late on the puck. But you know what? As much as we like Alexander Semin or not, the player who's going to make him work is really Alex Galchenyuk. And if Alex Galchenyuk is able to get more chances and be more aggressive, I feel that line's going to be a dangerous one. They were really dangerous during the preseason games. I think it was the best line versus Toronto for the first game. It's just a question of being able to score those goals. And let's be honest here. Versus the Red Wings, they could have scored easily three goals. It wasn't the case. But we as a group at TVA Sports, we did give Galchenyuk the second star. Why? Because he was working his butt off, and he was one of the best forwards for Montreal. So I really feel they're going in the right direction. Lars Seller is happy now, so we'll see. But they need a little more production offensively from Alexander Semin.
You mentioned Jeff Petrie, Bruno, a couple of moments ago, talking about the Montreal Canadiens. Yep. And we know in 2015, he does what you want a defenseman to do: retrieve pucks, get it up ice, move the puck, get it out of the zone. He's not the most physically robust hockey player you have, but his pair with Alexei Emelin, he takes care of that. But the thing about Petrie that I've noticed, is it just me, or has he been the one player who can take Alexei Emelin's skill and maximize it? Is he the best thing to happen to Emelin?
For sure. Because now Emelin can do whatever, I'm going to say, he can do whatever he wants and on the ice, because you know that Jeff is there to help him. Jeff Petrie right now is the best defenseman for the Montreal Canadiens. There's no doubt about that, and it's nothing against PK Subban, who's having a tremendous season defensively too. But it's really because Jeff is able to just do it all on the ice. What he did a week and maybe a few days ago versus Curtis Lillard in Ottawa, he was in the offensive zone, on the offensive dot, and just came back and took Lazard and just throwing like in front of Condon net and throwing on the corner when Lazard was on a breakaway is just amazing. Mm-hmm. And this play for me is what define Jeff Petrie's season so far. He's a horse out there. He's not trying to do too much. And you know what? In a way, he could concentrate to what he's doing best. So it's moving the puck well. And the physical aspect is there, but when you're playing with Emelin, you're telling Emelin, hey, go do your job. Don't think on the ice. And when Emelin is not thinking on the ice, that's really where and when he's at his best.
What did you think of the Plekanec contract, by the way? I thought it was interesting. The length of it kind of makes – it's a good deal, I think, for Bergeron, the length of it. But I was interested to see – the last thing I saw was that he didn't have any trade protection in the contract. Is that true?
At all. And I checked this last contract, that, and there was a transaction protection before, and he decided not to ask for it. It gives the Canes a lot of flexibility. But at the end of the day, it's a good two-year contract. For Plekanec, because he's going to make $7 million next year. After that, it's going to go back to $5 million. And you know what? That doesn't mean that Thomas Plekanec in 2 years won't play in Montreal. But what will be important for the Montreal Canadiens after Plekanec contract is to sign their best player, and right now the best player in the league, and that's Carey Price. So what Mark didn't want is to give a long-term contract to a player who's 32 years old, and maybe in 3-4 years, that contract will be a problem for the Canes, and maybe that's one of the reasons they won't be able, quote-unquote, to sign Carey Price. You know, between you and I, that contract will be done before, the year 17-18, I expect. But at the end of the day, it's giving Marc Bergevin a lot of flexibility, and Thomas Plekanec is not the type of player who's gonna run around and say, you know what, they should have given me more. They tried, and Thomas told me that they tried to have a 5-year contract. And obviously, if you look at the logic, it would have been a 5-year contract, $25 million. But the Canes were not prepared to give him that. After that, they went to 3 years. They were not ready to give him 3 years, and it ended 2 seasons. But that doesn't mean Thomas Plekanec is leaving in 3 years at all. I expect Thomas to finish his career in Montreal, because he really enjoyed playing here. It's a great organization, and like Thomas said, hey, there's a beautiful window right now to win a Stanley Cup in Montreal. And can you imagine him next year playing on another team where maybe the Canadiens maybe going to have a chance to win a cup again? Mm-hmm. You don't want that. You don't want that at all. If you spend more than 10 years in one place, you need to finish your career in a place like Montreal when finally things are going in the right direction.
And then plus we also don't know what other teams' rules on turtlenecks are as well. So I mean, it really does make it.
Hey, that's Thomas right there, and he's never going to change that. He's a great guy.
Yeah, the best turtleneck this side of Phil Esposito and Alexei Yashin. Renaud, last question for me, and it's more of a comment. Greg and I were talking earlier on about underrated hockey players, and we'll do so when we're finished talking to you as well. This may sound outlandish when I first say it, but hear me out. I think Carey Price is an underrated netminder in one very specific area. I don't think he gets enough credit for how well he handles the puck. Mike Smith always gets the headlines for puck handling. Ben Bishop does as well. But for my money, for efficiency and getting the puck to defense, but even getting the puck out of the zone, I think Carey Price is amongst the elite in the NHL, and no one really talks about it.
Yeah, you're totally right. And you should see Carey Price, when he doesn't have his gear on and he's on the ice by himself and he's taking a regular stick and he's shooting the puck on the net. I mean, he's got an unbelievable race shot. And he's practicing that, I'll say, at least once a week. Why he's doing that? To make sure that he'll have a good pass and a good mindset, and to be comfortable on the ice when he's got the puck on his stick. I don't remember Carey Price doing a mistake with the puck on his stick. It happens for sure in his career. I just don't remember the last time. You know why? Because he's one of the best. And when the 3-on-3 will start in Montreal, at one point we'll have overtime with the Montreal Canadiens, I think Carey Price is going to make the difference, because he's going to be your fourth player on the ice.
Yeah.
When he's going to have the puck and he's going to make sure to have it, he's going to be able to make a big play. And I won't be surprised to see Carey Price having more and more assists, because he's the type of goaltender that can do it all on the ice. He's not only saving pucks, he's moving the puck, and he looks a little bit more like Martin Brodeur when Martin was playing.
Mm-hmm.
And last one for me, sir. Where do you feel the wind blowing on that Quebec expansion team lately, huh?
Well, actually, I was hearing the commissioner, Gary Bettman, who's in Florida right now to work on the Panthers League deal with Broward County before you call. And he talked a little bit about it, saying that the process is on, but at the same time that, you know what, those two teams, Las Vegas and Quebec, will be really happy to have an NHL team soon. I'm not saying he's putting pressure on the commissioners there in the Broward County, but at the same time, he's letting them know that, you know what, those two cities are waiting. And it's not only those two cities who are waiting, it's the rest of the league, to be honest with you. So they're mm-hmm. going to take care of their own business to see if, and I don't think there'll be any issues now anymore with the Florida Panthers, at least for the next 5-6 years. If that deal goes through with the county, you have to look at the Hurricanes. I don't feel like the Hurricanes are close to move. And there's obviously the Coyotes. If the Coyotes have to move, it will be between now and the next 2 years. If they move, they're going to go to Las Vegas. But when you look at the big picture, it's better for every team to have money from an expansion. It's going to be $1 billion. It's a ton of money. It's good for the NHL. It's good for the league, not only because ownership will receive millions and millions of dollars, but it's the message that it's sending to North America about the, you know, the viability of the game. So I feel there'll be an expansion. I'm not convinced when exactly it's going to be announced. There's a lot of rumors that it could be announced in December at the Pebble Beach BOG meeting, but let's wait a while. We don't want to speculate on when the league exactly is going to announce it. But remember one thing: they announced the World Cup last year, in February, January, when we were at in Columbus
All-Star.
For the All-Star
yeah.
game. So this is a possibility too. Why not take the advantage of being in Nashville and make a big splash with an expansion announcement? So we'll see. It's going to be between, I'm not going to say now, because now there'll be no announcement, but somewhere in December, maybe January or February, I'm pretty sure we'll know more about the expansion process.
Excellent stuff. Renaud, merci mon ami. Comme toujours, merci.
Enjoy the day.
All right. Thank you very much, Renaud Lavoie from TVA Sports. Tonight you can see the Montreal Canadiens put their 6-0 record against the equally as impressive, although they do have a loss, the St. Louis Blues. It'll be Jake Allen facing off against Carey Price. One quick note about Alexander Semin, and he hasn't mm-hmm. scored. That's true.
I was talking eight shots.
I know.
That's
I was talking
crazy.
To someone in the offseason who worked out with Alexander Semin, and the first thing he said to me was, he's weird in that he works out in a very he works out in an old school way that's not necessarily the most conducive to hockey. And I said, what are you talking about? He said, it's almost as if he thinks he's an endurance or a distance athlete, and that's how he trains. Like, you know, most hockey guys will train for explosive power because you're out there for 45 seconds and right. you need to explode into things now, the speed of the game. He said he doesn't train that way at all. Like, if Alexander Semin is ever going to get that game back, because he does have a high level of skill, which, you know, being in Washington
ridiculous.
For as long as
he's
yeah. right.
Ridiculous.
But he said
yeah.
what's working against him is the way that he's always trained. That he thinks he's doing, you know, he's a distance runner or something. But he's not. That's hockey.
That's really
he's
interesting.
He's not training for the sport that he's in.
That's really interesting. Yeah, that's who the hell knows?
I don't know.
All I know is this. At six games into the season, he only is out shooting Torrey Mitchell and Devontae Smith-Pelly as far as Canadiens forwards go. And neither of them are skating with Galchenyuk and Eller. So,
yeah.
You know, something's got to give.
Smith-Pelly's got a shot there, by the way. He's down to under 10%. Like, he looks leaner. Does he look leaner to you? Because he's under 10% body fat now. He's dropped a few pounds, a little bit lighter. He's not the big sort of bulky guy that we saw coming over in the trade from Anaheim. I wonder if sooner than later, that guy doesn't have a shot at being the prototypical power forward in the NHL.
I like his game.
Me too.
I like his game.
Me
I thought
too.
That was a shrewd move on their part to pick him up. I know there was a lot of hue and cry about the trade when it was made from Habs fans, so I thought Smith-Pelly was a pretty good pickup.
Therrien wasn't going to use Sakic anyway. That became pretty obvious.
Yeah. Underrated players in the National Hockey League. I don't know if you've gotten a chance to see the story that we
did. I did, yes.
27 players we asked.
Only?
By the way, not enough players for our friends in the Yahoo comments who called the story garbage.
Hang on. We just had a federal election, okay? 30 million people in this country. Polls consisted of 1,200.
Someone ran the numbers, and it's like 27 people is like, what, 6% of the league or something? I don't know, some number like that, but... I don't know. I felt like asking 27 All-Stars about their opinions on something would be newsworthy, but evidently, we should have cold called the entire fourth lines of every team to see what they thought.
Gregory Campbell, Greg Wyshynski here.
Please don't hang up. We're not trying to sell you anything. The most underrated player in the National Hockey League, according to these 27 people, is Nicholas Backstrom of the Washington Capitals.
I don't disagree with that. He's not underrated in the sense that nobody knows who he is. I just think he's a classic underrated in that he's underappreciated as far as being not only the engine that helps make Alexander Ovechkin go, but also being year in, year out, one of the best two-way forwards in the entire NHL. And no one says a thing.
I think the problem I have with it, and I agree with some people that have said that the basic problem with any time you do the story is that no one can really figure out what the term underrated means.
That's true.
Is that I feel like if you had to apply an adjective to Nicholas Backstrom, it would be...
Enigmatic. No, he's not Russian, sorry.
Oh, Jesus. Overshadowed. Like, he's overshadowed by Ovechkin. Like, if it's a different circumstance, then maybe he's the straw that stirs the drink on that team, but but he'll always be overshadowed by his line mate.
So much the
I don't
same
think
way
that he's
that,
underrated
that,
because that, the only part of his game that's underrated is that people don't realize how good he is defensively. But, I mean, he's an 80 to 90 point forward. Yeah, he's real good.
But you go back and look at his draft, and whether it's Kessel or Taves or Staal or whomever, Broussard, if you say to average Joe Jane hockey fan, hey, who do you think's the leading scorer amongst these people in this draft class? How many are you going to say Nicholas Backstrom?
Not many.
Not many, but he is.
Number two on the list was John Tavares with 3 votes. And this is one that I have a hard time with because, like,
how
he was just nominated for a Hart Trophy, but yet I still feel like at the end of the day, he might still, I mean, he's not mentioned in the same breath as Sid.
Yeah.
He's not mentioned in the same breath.
Oh, I don't know about that. I don't know about that.
Yeah.
Whenever the leadership question, which is such a vague and such a vague issue and a conversation that ultimately goes nowhere. Who's the best leader? Can you think of a more boring conversation than who's the best leader? But nonetheless, we seem to have it in hockey all the time. Taves' name always comes up in relation to Sid.
You mean Tavares?
Oh, you say Tavares? I said Jonathan Taves.
Did I say Taves?
I thought you said Taves.
I meant Tavares.
Too much earwax or something. I had IFB in my ear all weekend.
No, Taves is definitely in the conversation. But I think I still think Tavares, despite being up for a Hart, is like a tick down.
Don't disagree, and he's one of the best players in the world. That guy with the Rangers, you put that guy with the Maple Leafs, you put that guy with the Philadelphia Flyers, he's a super-duper star.
Number 3 and 4 are tied with 2 votes apiece was Jamie Benn, who just won a scoring title. Jesus. These guys are... I mean, it's like asking a bunch of...
But a lot of them don't listen. You don't...
They just won a scoring title. Look at him, underrated.
But how many, honestly, how many hockey players know the 750 guys that play in the NHL every year?
I don't know.
Not many. A lot of guys don't even watch. Most guys, what do you think? At the end of the season, answer this question. End of the season, your team's eliminated from the playoffs, or your team didn't make the playoffs. Most hockey players are A, still watching hockey, B, not watching hockey.
Not watching hockey, but don't you have to know who won the Art Ross? Previous season?
I don't think you have to. I think it matters to guys like us. I don't know that it really matters to them.
I don't think
they commit it to memory.
Tied with Ben on this list is a guy who I think any underrated poll should probably be named after, and that's Marian Hossa.
Oh, he's just... I feel I'm embarrassed now talking about Marian Hossa. The amount of times that I have here on this podcast.
But underrated.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
And the thing is, too, he'll get a lot of love because he's the player's type player.
Yep.
Like, everybody looks at Hossa and wants to be that guy. The way that he protects the puck. I mean, even just like, man, I wish I could stick handle my hands as high on the stick as Marian Hossa does.
Mm-hmm.
Like, everything that the guy does is, like, mm-hmm. close to flawless.
I've
said before, he's as close to the perfect forward as Nick Lidstrom was to the perfect defenseman.
As one NHL All-Star defenseman told us, he's definitely one of these guys that doesn't get enough recognition, one of the best two-way players in the game, a Selke candidate, but he doesn't get the recognition because he doesn't play
center.
Center.
Yeah.
Exactly.
He's a winger. Even though that trophy was named for, created for a winger, Bob Gainey.
Let me ask you about a few people that were mentioned that received one vote from
our
panel.
On. First of all, Renaud Lavoie mentioned a couple of them. I think Jeff Petrie should be up there, and I think Thomas Plekanec should. And for a lot of years, Turtleneck's been up there as far as being a guy that can play pretty much with anybody on the Montreal
Canadiens. Quintessential second-line center, in my opinion. The perfect complement. Now, granted, you need a Galchenyuk to play like a one, and he's not there yet.
Yeah.
But a perfect second-line center.
Sure. But he's the one right now with Pacioretty.
Derek Dorsett, underrated? I think he's about rated.
I don't consider him underrated. Who on Vancouver? Who on Vancouver said he was underrated?
No, you can't vote for your own player.
Okay.
Anje Kopitar, underrated?
Until he wins a Selke. But it's tough to win, you know, those Stanley Cups. Underrated? Probably need to consider Selke consideration.
Is it okay to call him overrated?
I think everybody on LA is overrated right now.
I don't think Drew Doughty's overrated. The goalie's overrated. Quick's overrated. I think it's pretty clear. I think Dustin Brown is rated by most people who know hockey because they know exactly what he is.
Yeah, Dustin Brown may be the dirtiest clean player in the game.
Anje Kopitar is a one-time 80-point center. And has not missed much time.
Mm-hmm.
And 76, 73, 70, 64 last season.
Mm-hmm.
I love him.
And
I do not want the entire country of Slovenia on my ass for saying this.
Yeah.
But I feel it was Slovenia, right?
Yes.
But I feel like,
jeez.
But I feel like he's a little overrated as far as his output goes.
Yeah. But you know what he is? He's Steve Yzerman under Scotty Bowman.
So you're saying it's stylistic?
I think so. Mm-hmm. You know, Bowman was a guy that said, "Look, you need to forget about scoring titles and 100 points. You want to win Stanley Cups? Here's what we need to do." Watch LA games now. If you go back and watch LA games when Terry Murray was coaching, dude's flying the zone early, hanging up around the blue line. Look how deep Anze Kopitar comes down for the first pass. Like, he might as well just grab it off Doughty's stick. Like, that's how far back that center is coming. Like, he starts every rush of his is like 185 feet.
Phil Ralston writes, and I know what underrated means. It means Swedish. Underrated is to Swedes as enigmatic is to Russians.
And Hampus Lindholm would be the most underrated player.
We press on. Underrated or overrated, you tell us. What about a gentleman by the name of Phil Kessel?
Well, that's a hell of a question.
Underrated in the sense that his game is constantly criticized in ways that I don't think it's warranted.
There is, much like I drew the distinction with Carey Price in that I think he's underrated because he's an underrated passer and puck handler.
Mm-hmm.
I think that Phil Kessel's an underrated passer as well.
Yeah.
I think we just focus on the shot. That guy is a really accomplished passer. He really is. I think overall Phil Kessel, the player, is overrated because of where he came from, based mm-hmm. on the amount of headlines that he has generated. And it's really tough. But anyway, it's really hard to be an underrated player in Toronto. Think of who has ever been an underrated player in Toronto.
That's the fascinating thing about this poll. I mean, I can't tell you who we asked or you know, where they're from or any of that stuff. But once again, the only team we did who has the best ice, worst ice yesterday.
Yeah, it's good.
The only team mentioned there was Vancouver. In this one, the only Canadian team mentioned for most underrated player is Vancouver. We had Brandon Sutter for some reason. And we had Dorsett.
Yeah.
But no other Canadian team was mentioned insofar as underrated, overrated, including Calgary, which is kind of a surprise.
I know.
We consider how many of those guys would probably fit the bill.
I know the ice at ACC is better now, but I'm surprised no one mentioned Toronto. Like, I wasn't surprised at MSG, That ice has always been bad. It's such
terrible.
A multi-use facility.
Yeah, not surprised by Washington, because by the time you get to April, it's like 90.
Yeah.
So, you know.
Well, Florida was tops, right?
Florida was tops with Tampa right there with them, and L.A. and Anaheim.
Start drafting slower hockey players and just soak that ice and slow the game right down. Like Doug McLean used to do when Pittsburgh came to town and be double floods.
Joe Pavelski, underrated or, I mean, overrated?
No, I think he's underrated.
Underrated, I agree.
I think he'll always be underrated as long as Joe Thornton's there.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry. To draw your distinction, overshadowed.
Patrick Sharp.
Me.
Underrated?
Overrated. You think he's overrated?
Yeah, I do.
Why do you think he's overrated?
I think he's overrated. I think the appreciation of Patrick Sharp as being a very accomplished offensive player and a very versatile forward, I think that's right around what he is. But when you have playoffs like he had last year, and then you're treated as a conquering hero in Dallas, I think it's a little overrated.
That just comes with the hyperbole of being on a Stanley Cup team.
Important cog in a machine, but overrated as a player.
An important piece, but not someone you build around.
Justin Williams. Underrated? How do you figure that guy, right?
Because he's a tale of two players every year. There's right. the 82-game Justin Williams, and then there's we got to win 16 of these things, boys, Justin Williams.
I guess how you feel about Justin Williams is probably how you feel about all that malarkey about, like, clutch play.
Yeah, when does it matter, right?
Yeah.
If you just judge a player based on playoff performance. Okay, let me ask you this.
Yeah.
Claude Lemieux, underrated, overrated?
I would say underrated in the sense that
how can you be underrated with the Conn Smythe Trophy?
Because I think his regular season output always gets overlooked, and he was a pretty good regular season player too. And also, you can't quantify being a pest and a shadow, can you?
No, not yet. I don't think. One day,
if they come up with a stat for being a pest and they don't call it Domi, there's no justice in the world.
Like Corsi Domi. No, yeah. But he wasn't really a pest, though. He wasn't Ken Linsman kind of pest. You know, Ed Hospodar kind of pest. Like Esatique. Oh, that's it. You got to call it the Teak.
What's his Teak rating? Oh, that's
What's his
good.
Teak rating? Yeah, there it is. He's got a 46.5 Teak, man.
Let me run through these defensemen. Right. Jonas Brodin, underrated.
Overshadowed.
Yeah, definitely. And that's the thing with most defensemen. Like, you know, Brent Seabrook, is he underrated?
Well, listen,
he's just overshadowed.
I'll tell you what. Ryan Suter was overshadowed for so long by Shea Weber.
Yeah.
And now his partner, Roman Josi, to me would be the guy who's underrated, or should I say overshadowed, because he plays with Shea Weber.
Wasn't underrated by the Professional Hockey Writers Association, who I think gave him more votes than Shea Weber for the Norris.
Is that right? I didn't know that. Oh, good for them, because he did have a better year. Good for them.
Here's one that I find to be a little bit divisive, but we'll see. Is Oliver Ekman-Larsson underrated?
I'm too close to it, because I've been banging that drum for too long. I'm to the point where, let's see, who's got a better wrist shot, him or Vlad Tarasenko? That's right, right now. So I can't pretend to be non-biased.
But see, but OEL to me is another, is almost like John Tavares' disease, where I think the team he plays for, despite Tavares playing in New York, I mean, he's playing for the Islanders.
Yeah.
I think the team he plays for factors into this. You know, would he be viewed like PK Subban if he was playing somewhere else, Larsson?
A different kind of player, but I know what you're getting at. He would be closer to, put it this way, he'd be compared a lot more to Nick Lidstrom than he is now if you're playing in a higher profile market.
But it does track back to what Phil said, which is that if you're Swedish, you're automatically underrated.
Who's the most overrated Swede of all time?
Hold on. We'll get to that in a second.
That's a hell of a question.
Think about that for
honestly,
a second.
I think one of the most underrated defensemen of all time is a Swede, and that's Börje Salmi.
Sit on that for a second.
Okay.
Continuing with that train of thought. Niklas Jarmolson, underrated?
Overshadowed.
And finally, Anton Strahlman. Underrated. These are the people they said.
So when are you going to get to Hampus Lindholm? I come back to Hampus Lindholm.
We never got
gonna to... get to John Klingberg.
We never got to Hampus Lindholm. But isn't that funny?
How many more Swedish defensemen can be underrated, you dopes in the NHL?
I think Phil nailed it, man. I think he nailed
it. Oh, Phil. Yeah, 100% Phil. You win. Premier 12.
The entire, like, the entirety of the defense almost was Swedes.
And I blast off with Poirier solving. That's fantastic.
All right, hold on. Most overrated Swedes. Let me see here.
I think it would be the most overrated Swede.
Your highest scoring Swede, of course, is Sundin, Alfredsson, Lidström, Sedin, Forsberg, Naslund, Tomas Sandström, Salming. Let's see here.
Salming, the Jewish Chinese defenseman?
Michael Nylander. Patrick Sundström. But he might have been underrated, actually. He's really good.
I had 8 points that one game.
Tomas Holmstrom?
Nah. Has there been an overrated Swede?
Oh, Michael Renberg.
Oh, Legion of Doom line, man. He was a guy,
he's a product of it, though.
Hang on. You know what? The one thing he did better than anyone on that line is, and it always showed up in the third period, he leaned on defensemen. Like, Eric was... the way that he leaned on defensemen and exhausted them by the third period... Yeah, no, I...
Nicholas Cromwell?
Cromwell? There was a while where I thought he was going to be like a Norris Trophy guy.
He might be a little bit overrated. Kim Jansson. Tobias Enstrom's a tough one to figure.
I know like the underrated. Answer, Patrick Stefan. Got it.
Oh, nailed
there
it.
There we go. I'm very sing-songy today. I don't know why. Maybe I'm just excited about pot being legal in Canada.
Marcus Johansson be on my list or overrated. I'm not a big Marcus Johansson fan, to be quite honest with you.
Speaks well of you. I don't know why you say that about Marcus.
No, I know. Zibanejad?
Getting better and better. Heavier, too, eh?
Yeah.
Bigger this year. Stronger.
Oh, here's
pushed
one.
Around as a rookie
here's,
year.
Oh, I found it. Here's the most overrated Swede of all time.
Patrick Stefan. Who's more?
Carl Soderberg.
Hey, leading scorer for the Bruins last year.
Oh, actually, here's a legit question.
What?
Douglas Murray. Underrated, overrated? Ooh. Now, underrated as far as being a...
I think he's just where he is. Too slow for the NHL. Too slow for this game. Once upon a time, there was a spot for him in the NHL.
Yeah. But like prime of his career. Dollars and donuts. I'm going to go with overrated because
his
skill set is the kind of skill set that gets overrated. Like a big physical defenseman is always going to be overrated.
Okay, so Roman Polak's overrated is what you're saying.
Not anymore.
Because he plays on the
Leafs.
Yeah.
Right. He used to be this great unknown. Like, oh, a guy named Roman. He must
oh,
be.
Oh, yeah. He's like St. Louis, like right?
Centurion.
Yeah. They got a good one there. I guess in Toronto, like, what the hell is this?
Stephen V. King writes, overrated Swede Matt Sundin signed Canuck fans.
Yeah. Hey, man. The things we do for money.
Right. Indeed. Phil Ralston with a tweet of the year, maybe. But that's a great point. That's a great, so it never occurred to me, but he's right. He's completely right. Swedes are too underrated as Russians are too enigmatic.
Swedes underrated. I wonder how much of that is just a personality because they're the don't get in your way Swedes.
Yeah.
Like we've talked about on this podcast before. Find me a Swede that's been annoying on his team. Find me a Swedish guy who's been considered a headache or a distraction on his team. I'll wait.
As Finns are to dirty. Dirty Finns.
Dirty, cheap, dirty. Yeah.
Dirty. As Czechs are too old.
There's a resurgence in Czech hockey going on.
I hope so. There is. So does Slovakia.
There is.
Both those places need a little resurgence.
Czechs, in the last few seasons, there's a resurgence in Czech hockey.
A little mailbag. Oh, by the way, Duncan Keith out 4 to 6 weeks.
Yeah.
Can the Blackhawks survive?
Dun, 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 dun.
Give that guy a little rest, actually. Jesus. You know?
Yeah. What do they do? I mean, listen. I'm not crying for the Chicago Blackhawks. I've stopped. Oh, man, those poor guys. Those poor guys won 3 cups in 6 years.
It'll hurt.
Okay. Tough luck.
You're going to have a little TVR, a little bit more TVR in your life. Victor Svedberg.
Time to get force-fed, children.
Trevor Daly might have to get up over 20 minutes a night. He's only playing 18, 16 right now.
Nah, it's not proven to be the best fit right now.
Yeah, it's early. But Yarmolson will have to carry it, too. He's 20-31 so far this season.
Victor Hedman's in, speaking of Swedish defensemen, against Nashville tonight.
Oh, thank God.
That's bonus fries.
I did not want to see another situation where he gets an October injury and derails the season.
I know.
This is an email that we received from the colorfully named Carson Lavender. If you were coaching Crosby, would you let him try to do more on his own rather than pass first all the time? And there's been a lot written, a lot of think pieces written about Sid and the idea that he's being too passive with the puck. And I think it's something we've mentioned here and there, right?
I just don't see the explosiveness.
Yeah. I liked what Elliot said in 30 Thoughts today, by the way, about how when Crosby's frustrated, he has no one to talk to. Like when Taves was frustrated, Seabrook pulled him aside in 2013 quite famously and calmed him down. Like who is the veteran sage in Pittsburgh that's pulling Crosby aside?
Mario, Pierre LaRouche.
Yeah, that's it. ain't no Bill Guerin there. Ain't no Hal Gill there. Ain't no Max Talbot there. Ain't anybody there. It's kind of like...
Well, here's the question then. At this point...
Why does he need it?
At this point, should he need it?
Well, you always need it. I mean, Taves needed it. Right?
Yeah.
So? Sure. Everybody needs a friend.
Who has, let me put it this way, how can I say this delicately? Who has the balls to do that?
To Sid?
Yeah.
Someone who doesn't expect to be on his line?
Even if you were, like let's say that Brent Seabrook were on the Pittsburgh Penguins. All right? There's a difference between approaching Jonathan Taves in the penalty box and saying, hey buddy, calm the act down, versus doing the same thing to Sidney Crosby. Find me the guy that's going to do that.
Walks right into Mario's office and says, fire him. Mario's like, he's got a contract. Okay, trade him. I don't care.
Get him out of here. He talks
to me. Paul Sabili, let's go with that,
okay,
writes in, what do you two think of changing the delayed penalty rule? Well, this is one of these think piecey kind of questions for you, Merrick.
Yeah.
Change the delayed penalty rule to make it that once the attacking team gains the zone, the defending team needs to clear the puck to stop play. If the attacking team hasn't gained the zone, the current rule will apply. But if the puck leaves the zone off of the attacking team, play will continue to allow for more possible own goals. Well,
so essentially you're taking a 2-minute penalty and turning it into a 2-minute 30 penalty.
Basically, you're giving the other team 6-on-5 time. Yeah, basically. Where they have to clear the zone. They have to clear the puck out of the zone versus just gain possession. I like it, actually. I don't think it's a bad idea at all.
Or, if you want to say that it just should be a 2-minute penalty and that's what it is, how about when an infraction occurs, you automatically stop the clock. You automatically start the clock and time starts ticking off the 2-minute penalty until the other team touches the puck.
Well, that's reduced power play time, and we
certainly don't want
that.
No, it's not the same, because you pull the goaltender and you get the 6-on-5.
Yeah, but then you don't get 5-on-4.
True, so you just hand the puck over then if you want to make that decision. But what if you have a great line matchup?
And a tired defensive team.
Yeah. You hang on to the puck?
Mm-hmm.
Because otherwise, really, a 2-minute minor is not a 2-minute minor.
What did you think of the idea that the penalty killing team has to actually skate the puck out of the zone when they're shorthanded? That was something that was tested at R&D a couple of years ago.
If you want to increase goal scoring, that's one way to do it. I know for the Players Association, there would be a concern with overtired hockey players.
Uh-huh.
Because generally when you're taking a lot of times when you're taking a penalty, it's because you're tired. Mm-hmm. So you compound that by producing even more weary hockey players out there on the ice, which could lead to more injuries. That would be a concern of the Players Association. And I wouldn't say that they're wrong.
I would make it so that you have to skate the puck out of the zone before you clear it, and unless you're the goalie. The goalie can attempt to clear the zone with the puck. So every PK, everybody on the PK has to skate it out, but the goalie can shoot it out. Because that always leads to...
That would get skated out.
Yeah. Anything
you just
on the
want
PK,
exhausted hockey. You just want like chalk.
I do.
Chalk outlines all over the ice.
Yeah, I don't care.
You want.
I don't care. I didn't grow up. As you know, everybody in Canada knows, I didn't grow up with these people.
I don't know.
So I don't
though.
Care.
I don't care what happens to them afterwards. Can't tie their shoes. That's fine. You know, can't hear their children sing. That's fine. Yeah, whatever. Well, yeah. You knew the risks.
I'll listen to you. Knew the risks. Everybody knows where you stand on that shit. Good question though, Paul. So
that's a good question.
I think we sort of agree. Finally, Merrick, I'll ask you, how many times did you watch the Star Wars trailer?
Zero.
Oh, all right.
Because it wasn't on either during the Rangers San Jose game or the Canadian election last night, or I flipped as soon as I went to commercial on the Blue Jay game. So
I watched it a few dozen times, and let me tell you, it was fantastic. I am somebody who is mildly spoiled on what happens in the film, so I was excited to see certain elements that I've only heard rumors about coming to fruition. And I'll be fine. I will say that I think that Disney and Lucasfilm are greatly overrating the fact that people will come to this movie in droves without knowing anything about the characters that are in the movie. They're selling Han Solo and Chewbacca. But they have all this new cast, and no one knows who the hell they are and who they're playing or what the story is. And I think that's kind of problematic.
Chewbacca, left-hand shot, right-hand shot.
He is. Let me think about how he holds the crossbow. I think he might be a righty. But I gotta.
I want to know how you geek out on Star Wars based on how they hold their lightsabers. I want you to tell me. Whether character X, Y, Z / Z is a left-hand shot or a right-hand shot.
Yeah, it really depends on where, you know, which hand is over which hand when they hold a lightsaber.
That's it. Like, if you have your right hand on the bottom, you are a left-hand shot. Mm-hmm. Switch it around, you're a right-hand shot.
Yeah.
I want to know. I want you to go level 10 Star Wars geek and let me know. Left-hand, right-hand shots of all the characters in Star
Wars.
The main
ones. It's a tough question because if you're a Jedi, generally you probably don't even need a stick.
You want to talk about hockey for a second before I wrap up because I got to get going?
Go ahead.
I'm doing something fun tonight. With an old friend of mine that I haven't seen in a few years, but I'm looking forward to this. Tonight at the Madison, all right, that is in downtown Toronto at Bloor and Spadina. If you're in the area, the event starts at 6 o'clock, hosting and interviewing this young man. It is a book launch. By the way, I got your book yesterday, so thank you for sending that along. Yeah, I got it.
Nice.
But this is Patrick O'Sullivan's Breaking Away, a harrowing true story of resilience, courage, and triumph. I first met him when he was playing with the Niagara Ice Dogs, the Mississauga Ice Dogs of the OHL.
Mississauga.
Yeah. That's how you say it properly. And he was playing online with John Carcillo and Dan Carcillo and John Hekimovic. Such a skilled hockey player, didn't really, as we all saw, go his way in the National Hockey League. But if you understand the story of him getting to the National Hockey League, it's a miracle that he made it, given what happened between him and his father. It is a proverbial trying to live through your child story, complete with emotional and physical abuse at every single level of his life. So he'll be there tonight, be reading from his book, answering questions as well. Book launch tonight is at the Madison, which is a really cool place. It's like an old, you've been there before. I said, you know, Matt, of course, you drinker, you know that. Madison's a cool spot. It's where Bobby Hull once let me put on his 1961 Stanley Cup ring, and Bobby was not sober while he did that. So it's at the Madison tonight, 6 o'clock. It all kicks off. The book is called Breaking Away, the Patrick O'Sullivan story, and it should be a lot of fun tonight. I'm looking forward to catching up to Patrick.
Brilliant.
And if you're in the area, if you live in Toronto and you want to come down, please, I would love to see you, and I'm sure Patrick would as well.
Nice.
Yeah, really great. It was such a good – you know, the thing about Patrick O'Sullivan was whether you liked him when you saw him in junior or not or indifferent to his game, that guy had an NHL shot, like an NHL shot at the top level when he was 16 years old. There are few players I've ever seen shoot the puck as hard and as accurate as Patrick O'Sullivan.
Wow.
Cautionary tale, though, for all you hockey mums and dads out there.
All you kids out there.
Yeah.
And as Merrick mentioned, take your eye off the puck. My book is selling, even though it doesn't come out until November 1st, and people seem to all have it.
It's on my coffee table right now.
Thanks for everybody getting it. Number one hockey book right now on Amazon for in the U.S., which is great.
Excellent.
And they put a little number one bestseller tag next to the book's name, which is always beautiful. But yeah, give it, it's available now there. It's on Triumph. I'm going to be doing a lot more promotion for it in the coming weeks. But thanks for everybody who's already purchased it. Nobody's read it yet, which means that there are no terrible reviews. So that this is sort of the salad days of being an author.
Mm-hmm.
The good time. I'm so excited to get your book. Cracks it open.
This guy doesn't know his ass from page six.
He doesn't know. He said it's
this
a... He goes a forward and he's clearly a sentry.
Doesn't know a wrist shot from a wristwatch. Who is this guy? Where did he play? Go to his hockey DB.
Yeah. So there you go. So thanks. It's a Take Your Eye Off the Puck.
Cool.
A lot more about that coming up soon. Also, spoke with Danny Ryland, the commissioner of the National Women's Hockey League, for a podcast that'll go up later this week, probably either Thursday or Friday.
Cool.
As part of those shows. And there you have it. So yeah. Everybody, thanks for listening. Thanks to
Renaud Lavoie.
Joining
TBA
us.
Sports.
But it's not fun if you don't say it as Lavoie. And thanks everybody for listening to the show today.
And come out tonight, Madison, 6 o'clock Eastern.
Madison, 6 o'clock. And also congratulations to Canada on your impending weed legalization.
I can't wait to find out what this weed stuff is all about, Greg. I've been looking forward to it for all this time. I've heard a lot of good things.
Yeah. can't find a single bud in Stouffville, I'll tell you that.
Remember last time you were over at my place?
No. All right, everybody. We'll talk to you soon. Bye.
All right, bye.